This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 118. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Welcome back to the show, Berners. We've had a couple of weeks without you. We had a guest slot from our illustrious captain, Richard, and also did a solo slot. So did you get to listen to any of those while you were away?
Unfortunately not. I was pretty busy. I was engaging with the likes of Des Haynes, Viv Richards, Richie Richardson, you know, just a couple of old mates of mine just hanging around down in Port of Spain.
Very nice too. So you were involved with some of the stuff going on around the West Indies and India series, were you?
Yeah, that's right. So we took a system down to the Queen's Park Oval there in the Port of Spain for the build up to their eagerly awaited series. Anything on West Indian soil is eagerly awaited by the fans. I don't think so much by the players, having been down there on the shop front. But yeah, it was pretty intriguing and interesting to see the differences in the ways the squads and lined up, so to speak, with training and their whole view of it, and how it was, I would say, a science from India's perspective at times, even going into such fine detail to knowing how much fluids their players had taken in and at what times, to kind of how many balls they'd bowled and what sort of training they were doing prior to the game, whereas the West Indies was a little bit more laid back, as they're very well known for, and seemed a little bit more kind of haphazard, and was based more about, you know, the players feeling good and confidence building, rather than actual kind of knowledge based assessment, I would say. Yeah, it was a really good trip, and Pitch Vision's going to be installed with the West Indies now, so hopefully they can build on that and start this kind of rise hand in hand with us guys. So that would be magnificent to get them back on the world cricket map.
It's a lot more about preparation these days, and as you've said, the West Indian way is a bit more laid back and the Indian way is a bit more scientific. So now the West Indies have got Pitch Vision. Do you think they'll be able to put together the kind of scientific side of things that Pitch Vision brings with their laid back attitude to training?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely got you know, things in place which allow them to gain a lot of knowledge about players from the actual game side of things. And of course, what we can do with Pitch Vision is kind of use that as a tool to put a framework around that knowledge, to identify things prior to games and in the run-up to series. If they're looking at certain players they might target, or even surfaces they're playing on, Pitch Vision will be very good for them to just provide their players with more knowledge and have a better bedrock of knowing what their players are capable of doing, which I think is really, really valuable knowledge for a coach or someone that's trying to create a plan of action. You know, you build an action plan, but inevitably for that to come off, you need the right people that are activating the plan. So if you've got a guy that's bowling at the end who maybe shouldn't be, he's bowling some loose deliveries or can't quite control his slower ball or bowling the block hole, what we can do is build a great knowledge base from Pitch Vision, which they can then transition into the real game without learning about these things as they're actually unfolding in an ODI, in a 2020 game, or even in a test match. But it was quite interesting talking to the Indian guys, and they were talking about how the various range of formats in the games are causing the players great difficulty, especially the bowlers. You imagine going from Mumbai playing in the IPL final with 50,000 in the stadium, and you're having to change your delivery every ball as Tendulkar once again flaunts at it outside off stump and you get hit over cover, to going into a test match where your line and length is subtly different. So getting the players in the right kind of train of thought to then build a test match line where they're not going to start getting hit over cover is not always easy to do. So using, you know, something like Pitch Vision to go in and use directly with that can be very valuable as well.
So you haven't had much time to play yourself. You've been too busy working with the top guys.
Yeah, it's all been it's all been bling bling cricket these last 2 weeks, but I have come back to the news that Ealing have, fortunately, I would say fortunately, I'm a club man, have managed to pick up 2 wins in my absence. So, of course, I'll be diminished to the third or fourth team of the Ealing Drags this weekend and probably forced to hit another double century. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we played an astounding game at the weekend. We managed to get ourselves bowled out for 73, which is never a good score to defend.
Yeah.
But we had a, just through sheer willpower, we got them eight down. In fact...
I like that, sheer willpower. There was no ability. We just kind of willed each other on. Was there a lot of hand clapping, bum patting, that kind of thing in between over? Like, go on, son, I believe in you.
Well, it was one of those games where, you know, something was happening almost every ball. So, you know, it was very easy to stay switched on and enjoying it and getting in the batsman's ear as wicketkeeper and chatting away and telling him that he'll look like an idiot if he gets out now because all his friends are failing as well. And as we went lower down the order, I managed to tell one batsman that if the top six can't do it, why should he? And he managed to get himself out because of that. So there was a lot of chirping going on, and it was a close finish. In fact, we had our occasional away swing bowler come on to see if he could produce a bit of magic. Got 2 wickets in 2 balls. The number 10 batsman came out, and he didn't look like much cop. And he lunged at the first ball. I was standing up. He had his foot on the line. I took the bails off. I went mental. Umpire said not out. And he still had his foot on the line. He didn't move, you know. It's one of those where he just stayed exactly where he was with his foot on the line. So,
but you might have to question the fact if you actually asked that umpire after the game, is it out if the player's foot is on the line?
Yeah.
I wonder if he'd actually know the answer.
Well, he should know that. He should know that. Yeah. They're all qualified these days, aren't they? The league umpires, so they should be. They should be up to speed with who the line belongs to. It's mine.
It's always the way, isn't it? Umpires.
I still maintain he had his foot on the line, though.
Brilliant. Yeah, no matter what happened, he still had his foot on his line. As you're going down, as you've left the ground, you're at the traffic lights, umpires waiting there at the traffic lights, wind down the window, he still had his foot on the line, mate.
Time now for our weekly update with Watsonian Cricket Club, the club that we have adopted for the British summer. And with me on the line now is Tim Weston, who is the pro who we spoke to a few weeks back when we were up in Edinburgh when we had a little bit of bad weather. How's the weather doing now, Tim? Is it any improvement since I was up there?
To be honest, it hasn't been the best summer around. Our last previous game over the weekend was washed out, and we've had a lot of rain basically over the last month or so. So it hasn't been the best summer, but hey, there's another couple of months left, so hopefully the weather can come out and we can get some good wickets and some good cricket.
And personally, how has your season gone so far? We're about halfway through June, aren't we? So how have you been doing so far?
Not too bad. I started the season really well. I was hitting the ball really nicely and managing to get a few scores. And then the last couple of weeks, haven't delivered really in the runs department. But, I think cricket's kind of a game like that. I feel like I'm hitting the ball well, and it's just a matter of, backing my cricketing ability and sooner or later formal change. So.
What's your general philosophy on batting? When you go out to bat, what are you aiming to do?
I think for me, just over a number of years, it's taken me a while to kind of get to a mental state where I just try and approach my batting just by making sure that I'm doing my mental routines in between balls and that I'm playing on instinct. You know, there's obviously times and depending on wickets and certain bowlers you might be facing where you need to tailor your game a certain amount. But I think I've always found, well, I've found, you know, the more I've played the game and the further I've gone on, that if I worry about those things that I can't control myself, you know, such as the bowler, such as the wicket, certain things, that I end up probably going outside my game a little bit and probably not playing on instinct, which I think, you know, if you look at, you know, most of the better players in the world, they're that way because they just break everything down to make it really simple and just play on instinct.
When you're out in the middle and you do get in out of that frame of mind where you sort of you start thinking a little bit too much about it, what do you say to yourself to get back to just, you know, watching the ball basically?
Oh, I just basically just say to myself, look, you know, I've been lucky here, you know, I've maybe faced a ball or whether it be a couple of balls or a couple of overs without being hard on myself and doing my routines properly. You know, I need to do my routines well. I've been lucky enough to get away with not doing, you know, post that small period, you know, that you're talking about. So I just try and, you know, tell myself, look, do my routines, you know, just use a couple of breathing techniques, a couple of big deep breaths and just trying to clear the mind in that way. So.
When you're talking about routines there, where does that start? Are you the type of batsman who, you know, has to have the preparation right, you know, literally from when you wake up, everything has to be done in a certain order, you know, in the way that some batsmen have to do it? Or are you just one of those guys who can rock up, put your pads on and out you go?
Yeah, I find that, you know, if I become too routine-based pre-game or pre-innings, it doesn't upset me, but it puts me in a headspace where I'm worried about too many external things, as opposed to, you know, I think you've just got to, you know, for me, it's just pad up, you know, go out and watch the game, watch the cricket, see what guys are doing, see how guys are playing, and then in the end, you know, as soon as you step over the boundary rope, okay, now's my time to actually focus in, because I think you can waste a lot of mental energy, you know, worrying about a lot of things that are totally out of your control, like superstitions, like certain things like that. But I think, you know, as soon as you step onto the park, well, then yeah, sure, then you need to be, you know, then you need to be really hard on yourself in terms of your routines. But you know, every personality and every individual is different. So some of those people, you know, for a routine may start, as you say, very early in the morning or the night before, you know, eating specific things and you know, having specific sleep patterns, etc. But I think what you actually find is the more you play the game and the more different levels you actually play the game, in the end, it's actually got nothing to do with that. You know, it's all that really matters is as soon as you're on the park, it's the players that, you know, perform mentally well on the park are the ones that perform well.
So let's talk about that. You've crossed the white line. What's your what is your process? What as you're walking out to bat, what happens next?
For me, it's just like, okay, here's my opportunity. Just watch the ball and do your routine. So, you know, as soon as I get out to the, you know, I'll generally have a chat to the batsman who's currently in there, or you know, at times, you know, a couple of quick words just with the batsman on the way out if I think they're in a, you know, in a mental frame of mind where that's okay and you're not intruding their space.
And what do you do between balls then?
Between balls, I generally, I'm not really, really, what would be the right word, methodical in terms of it, but I generally just, you know, so I'll mark my guard once the delivery of the ball's over. You know, and then just head off to, you know, just walk a pace or two away or stand at the crease and just try and think about other things. I find that, you know, I'll just kind of have a look around, you know, see what the environment's like, have a look at people around, etc. Just certain things to take your mind away and so that you're not focusing or trying to preempt in terms of what's actually going to happen, what's the next ball that's going to be bowled, where you're going to play it, etc. And that comes back to that thing where I was talking about it. I think it's so important that people play on instinct, because if you're a good enough player, the vast majority of the balls, if you give yourself the opportunity to play on instinct, you actually play them well. It's the ones where you have when your mind is a touch clouded, you know, and you might be expecting a certain ball or you might be thinking about different things, which means that you don't pick up, you know, the release, etc. You don't pick up the length of the line of the ball as well as probably what you would. You know, when the bowler's got the ball at the back of his run-up, you know, then I'll start doing, a couple of taps with the bat, just making sure that my body position's in certain areas, making sure I've got a certain amount of weight on my front foot, etc. And then just, you know, as the bowler comes in, you know, making sure that I'm looking in the right areas and looking for the right cues so that when they release the ball, hopefully I'm going to gain as much information as possible, but also that my mind is, I've done those routines to tick things off so that when the bowler is coming in, I'm not actually thinking about external things. All I'm doing is filling my mind so that when they actually goes to the release the ball, that I'm, as I said, you know, in a nice headspace where I'm just getting as much information from the ball as I can, and therefore playing on instinct. And as I said, I think if you do that, the vast majority of times you make good decisions.
Now, you're an experienced cricketer. You've played at first class level, and you're playing club Premier League level at the moment. So where does practice fit into all that for you?
I think, well, action nets are massive, and physical skills are a huge thing. You know, you could have the best mental skills in the world, but you might be found out. But I think it's even probably more the other way. I think when you get to a certain level, so if you're playing Premier cricket, I think generally you get to a point where your physical skills or your technique are good enough, because you wouldn't be there unless it was. You know, there's certain tweaks that you need to make and certain areas that you need to continually work on. But I think when you get to that point, then not only are your physical skills really important at training, but when you actually are completing those physical skills, it's important that you actually do the mental routines that you're going to use in the game. I think so many people, and to be honest, as a professional cricketer or a cricketer in general, it's very easy to go down to the nets and spend an hour and a half or 2 hours hitting balls and going, great, you know, that's my day done, I'm preparing myself for cricket, and to an extent that's right. You know, you're hitting balls, you're experiencing balls in different areas on different conditions, etc. But I think the key thing comes back to it, and they talk about it, it's not about how you practice. You know, you need to make sure that you're practicing properly, and you're practicing yourself by putting yourself under a situation where it's going to be at least similar to game situations, if not harder. And then I think, you know, and that's where those mental routines come in and are really important, because, you know, you might go and hit balls for 45 minutes then, but if you're doing them, you know, and you're really strict on your routines and you're putting yourself in a situation as in you would face within a game, I think your quality is so much better.
What does a good practice session look like for you then? What would be your sort of perfect preparation?
I think, and this is where a lot of people probably underestimate or probably don't put enough pressure on themselves in terms of training. I think if you look at a team environment, you might track practice for 2 hours, you might spend 20 minutes in the nets, you're probably batting in pairs. You know, you might only face probably, you know, 30 balls or something along those lines. I think for me, every time I go into the nets, I need to have a specific thing that I'm trying to work on. So especially on, say, a Tuesday is really good, because it gives you the opportunity to say, okay, today I'm going to work on playing the ball late, or I'm going to work on leaving the ball, or I'm going to work on making sure my body weight is getting nicely forward and back, or that when I'm hitting the ball, I'm in a nice solid position. I think that's really good. You know, you need to go into a net with a specific idea in mind, because in the reality of it is you're not actually hitting enough balls to be able to cover a number of bases. And I think that's what a lot of cricketers, that's probably their biggest downfall in terms of training. They try to go in there and they try and play all the shots on, you know, and more often than not on wickets that probably aren't conducive to all those shots. So then they end up coming out of the net feeling underdone, where I think if you have a solid idea in mind in terms of what you're working on for that specific practice, well then you're more likely going to come out of there feeling positive and feeling like you've made steps towards being a better cricketer. I think on a Thursday, say, you know, you probably need to go, and that's really where you need to go and do and work on your routines and just try and play the ball as you see it, because that's generally how you're going to play in a game situation. So, you know, I think you need to, on a Thursday, just really focus and really make sure that you are playing as you would in a game. Tuesday, you know, there might be specific areas where you need to work on. But all along, you know, guys need to make sure that they're doing their routines in terms of how they would still play on a game.
Well, Tim, we wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season. We'll be keeping track of you as time goes on. But for now, Tim Weston, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Time now for the question section, and we're back to a couple of questions this week. And don't forget, you can win a prize, which is a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy from pitchvision.com/academy. So, Berners, I've handed the mailbag back to you this week, and you've had a little look inside. What have you got?
Well, we've got quite an amusing question here from Dino Curtis, and it's something that probably applies to most players when they're between the age of kind of 8 to probably 14. I don't know how old Dino is, but he's saying he's got a big problem, and it's fear. The big, hard, red thing coming towards my head really worries him. And he says it's always in the back of his mind due to all the painful experiences he's encountered during his cricket playing days. And I'm sure that every single person who's played the game has got similar feelings. And he's just saying it's just that when you bat and you face the bouncer, it's there when you bowl and have the ball hit back hard at you. It's there when you field at short leg or just about anywhere on the ground. So he's saying no matter what you do, wherever you go, you cannot hide from this red, round, hard thing. And it keeps on taking you from taking half chances and slows your reactions and hinders your game. I think he says he finds it amazing to watch international players who have no fear of the ball whatsoever and put their bodies in the line of fire day in, day out. So, Coach, how has he overcome this very, very basic mental hurdle, which is quite an important hurdle to overcome when you want to play the game of cricket?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would hazard a guess that he's either a young player, he hasn't quite got his head around going from a softball to a hardball. That takes a little bit of time to get your head around. Or he doesn't play a massive amount. Because the more you play in practice, the more that feeling vanishes. I mean, if you're playing club cricket, you're always onto a bit of a loser because, you know, you can't practice every day, or most people anyway can't practice every day. But the more that you do practice and the more that you do play, the less that you get that feeling of the fear of the ball, because the more you trust your technique in the circumstances.
Yeah.
If you've been practicing, you know, with one of those orange Skya bats, someone's been smacking the ball up in the air or hitting one, you know, on the flat to you at cover, and you've done that 100 times and you caught most of them, even if you dropped a few to start with, then when you go out into the middle and the ball goes up in the air, you don't think, oh my God, I'm not going to catch it. You just think, oh great, another Skya. Because you know you're going to be able to catch it.
Yeah.
So it really is a matter of technique making you confident to be able to do it. And the only way really to do that, there's two ways. The main one is practice as much as you can until you're getting it right more times than you're getting it wrong. So you've got the confidence there. I played a game in the week, this week actually, where it was a midweek match. So for the first time in a while, I didn't don the gloves. I positioned myself at mid-wicket, which I thought perhaps was the safest position. Maybe mid-on might have been slightly safer. And I had that slight feeling of, I'm not used to this. This is a bit strange. And, you know, it took me a couple of goes. You know, they hit a couple of balls to me. It took me a couple of goes to get that feeling of, oh, actually, this is okay. I'm going to be all right here. But if you're not used to fielding in a certain position, or you don't practice catching skies, you don't practice getting the ball hit to you, then, yeah, you will have that slight feeling in the back of your mind that says I can't do it, so practice. And the other thing is to, which sounds a little bit wishy-washy, but is to visualise yourself doing these things successfully. Just like a batsman, like Hayden used to do, you know, walks out to the middle and imagines himself scoring 100 and all the shots that he's going to play to get to 100. You can visualise yourself catching the ball or fielding the ball successfully, you know, or, you know, even if it's just the ground, someone hits it along the ground and you're out at deep mid-off and you run in and you pick it up clean and you throw it back in. Even that little thing just gives you that confidence to say, oh, it's going to be all right today. I'm going to be okay. And you can imagine that. You can visualize that. And that really does work because as far as your brain is concerned, it can't tell the difference between what has actually happened and what you've imagined has happened. It's only your conscious mind that can tell the difference. The unconscious mind can't tell the difference at all. So even just sitting down and imagining yourself catching balls is almost as effective as actually catching balls. So if you can't practice as much as you'd like, then spend some time just imagining practicing. Even that is going to give you a higher success rate than just standing there worrying about it.
Do you want me to drop my milkman analogy in? milkman first day of his job, doesn't really know his route, doesn't know whether it's orange juice, semi-skimmed, full fat. Give him a year in, he's doing it blindfold. He knows every twist and turn. He knows Merrill at number 31. He knows Arnold at number 37. He's right in the zone. Same with playing cricket. Same with that red hard thing coming towards your head.
He always delivers, doesn't he?
And yes, inevitably, he always delivers.
What's next, man?
Okay, we've got a question here from Robin, who's just inquiring about strength and conditioning for players who are aged between 14 and 17. So slightly younger, he's got a good understanding that their bodies are still naturally developing, but wants to identify what can help in terms of getting greater speed and power when hitting the ball. So not necessarily building bodybuilders, but building very cricket-specific, strong players.
Yeah, this is quite a tricky one because strength and conditioning is a complicated area and there's a lot of myths around it and it's very individual. And then it gets even more individual when you're talking about players who are aged, 14 to
17.
14 to 17. Because you'll have the 14-year-old who looks like he's 10 and then you'll have the 17-year-old who has to shave twice a day.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I know what you mean, yeah.
There's a wide development spectrum within that age group. So that puts another level of complexity onto the level of complexity that is strength and conditioning. So how do you break it down into something which, you know, if you're a coach, say, for example, you're a coach of young players, you're a cricket coach, you want them to do as well as they can, but you haven't got any formal qualifications in strength and conditioning. You don't want to get it wrong. Yeah, because I think probably the golden rule about strength and conditioning is the first rule is don't do any harm. You know, if it's better to do nothing than do something that's going to do harm. But Robin's got the right idea by saying, I don't want to do bodybuilding. So the first thing you want to do is you want to make sure that you're looking at each player individually, which is hard when you're in a group circumstance. But you want to make sure that the 14-year-old who looks like he's 10, you know, so he's, you know, he might be, in terms of his chronological age, he's 14, but in terms of his development, you know, he's still like a 10-year-old. You want to make sure that he gets the right kind of training compared to the guy who has gone through his peak height, velocity, and, you know, he's 6'4", and, you know, and he's wide as he is tall. So somebody like that, you know, you can push a lot harder and you can do a lot more training with somebody like that than you can do with a 10-year-old. You want to do some kind of development of the player's ability to run and turn, change direction. And that comes from eccentric training, which is just really running up and down. So you can get a lot of fitness work, a lot of eccentric type work into doing nets where you've got running between the wickets and also doing lots of fielding drills where there's some kind of direction change in the drill. Any drill where you're changing direction is going to be good for cricket because it strengthens up the muscles and the ligaments of the hips and the legs. Then the other thing that you want to be doing is talking to players about the stuff that is around strength and conditioning. So although you haven't necessarily got direct control of it, if the players are ambitious, you know, they want to get on and they aren't necessarily at that age, they aren't necessarily ambitious and they might not want to get on. I mean, they might just want to have a game of cricket once a week. But if they are ambitious and they want to get on, then yeah, you do want to talk to them about the type of thing like getting enough rest, getting enough sleep, making sure you're properly hydrated, and making sure you're eating the right kind of foods. So that's an important element of strength and conditioning, because it's not just about going to the gym three times a week and then playing cricket. It's about what happens in between those times as well. And the better prepared you are, then the better you're going to perform on the field. As I say, it doesn't apply for all players, because some guys, they're not going to be bothered by that. They just want to have a game of cricket with their mates, which is fine. But, you know, as long as you're giving people the option, as long as they know that it's there. And then the final thing is you do want to be encouraging them to do some kind of resistance training. Now, the problem is, coaches, that you don't want to be coaching players how to do squats and deadlifts and, you know, cleans and bench press and all that kind of thing, because, you know, you haven't got the experience, you haven't got the qualifications. So you want, what I recommend all good coaches doing is hooking up as closely as possible with a local gym who understand the needs of young athletes. It's again something that you'll have to play a little bit by ear, because if it's the guy who just wants to have his game of cricket, then it's not going to be relevant. But if you've got some players with a bit of talent and a bit of ambition about them, you really want to be able to refer them to somebody who you trust to be able to do a job for you. So, and what they can do is then they can assess the player for their specific individual needs, and then they can give them a program based on improving performance and preventing injury for specifically for cricket. That's not always easy to do. There might not be a gym in the area that provides that kind of service, so you might have to hunt around to find someone who can do the job. But if you look hard enough, there are people who know what they're doing, and you can refer them out, the players out, if you've got someone who's genuinely ambitious. A word of warning, as I said back at the beginning, don't do anything that you're not completely comfortable doing. You have to be sure that the type of training that you're doing with your players is something that is not going to cause them any kind of injury. So stick to the kind of running stuff, sprinting, changing direction, the stuff that you know you can do because you do it within drills, and you can teach them correct technique for turning and all that kind of thing. And then make sure that they do a decent warm-up with some good mobility stuff in it, because that's important to learn to mobilise the joints, especially around the hips, the ankles and the shoulder joint. And then once you've done that, you can do that in the warm-up. Once you've done those two things, refer anything else out. That's quite a short answer to a very long and complicated question. So I hope that does the job for you, Robin. That's all we've got time for on the show this week. But as Berners is back, I'm going to hand the competition reins back to you, Berners. If you remember, you can win a prize, which is a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can learn how to improve any aspect of your cricket with our online coaching. So, Berners, which question did you prefer this week to win the prize?
Well, I think I've got to take my hat off to Dino. You know, it takes some minerals to stand up and say you're scared of the ball. I'm scared of the ball as well, Dino, to be honest, but I never told anyone until now, so I'm going to award you the prize this week, and maybe one day we can play a game of cricket together and we can both be scared at fine leg, which is my favourite position to field at.
If you want your question answered on the show, then you can have it answered. If you email us or send us in a question in one of many different ways. So, Berners, what's the email address and phone number for getting in touch with us with your question to win a prize?
You can give us a call on 02088 167 691, or drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get us on Twitter. We're always available, hanging around on Twitter. It's PV Cricket Coach there. And if you go onto Facebook, you can also find us there. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. And there we are, hiding away, posting our videos on there and generally wasting our time instead of doing some proper work, but for goodness sake, don't tell Richard about that. Speaking of Richard, have you got anything to say to him regarding his filling in job? I know you haven't listened to it, but do you feel under threat now?
Well, talking about part-time work, we played yesterday in a little cricket festival with All Out Cricket, kind of a last-ditch six-a-side event.
Yeah.
And, of course, we were victorious. We actually won the actual game. We had Paul Hutchinson and Dominic Osler, who were playing with us, who pretty much saw us through to the end. But our leader, our hero from above, Mr. Welsh, did his utmost to throw the semi-final by going for an excess of 20 runs in one over, which consisted of, I believe, three wides. He confessed to getting the yips as we traipsed off of the field, but he stormed back in the final to bowl a comprehensive set of six. So I can only take my hat off to him. And once again, he led from the front.
It's not bad considering he only plays once a year, isn't it?
Yeah, we were talking about that. CEO of a cricket company and plays about two games of cricket. So good on your boss. Thanks for letting me play. And we'll see you all next week.
Well, the main thing is that we won. That's all that matters. So on that victorious note, that's the end of the show. And until next week, we'll see you next time.